Welcome to Shaken and Disturbed, everybody. Father God, Darren Karp here, of course, with woman-hating, birthday
Let's hear
forgetting
it.
mother, John Thrash. John,
Vinny's
how
like
are
freaking
you?
out. He's like, that's
I
not me.
know.
Why
He's
would you
like,
say that to
that's
start the show? Yeah, that's just me.
exactly.
Darren likes to dunk on me the minute we start the show, Vinny, so apologies in advance.
I get to start the intro of the episode, so, and he can't really interrupt, so I feel like this is my only time that I can
That's right.
really just sink my teeth into him. But that third knowing nod in the background, if you're watching on YouTube, is Vinny Politan. Vinny, good to have you. You were coming from Vinny Politan Investigates, which is on Court TV, Law and Crime Network, YouTube, Linear, all the things. It started a few weeks ago, about May 18th, if I have that correctly. But Vinny, welcome to Shaken and Disturbed.
Great to be here. And I'm wondering, how can you hate women and be in the world of true crime at the same time?
I don't, to be clear.
He disrespects them. He disrespects them and he just thinks they should have no rights. Right, John?
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
yeah,
John?
Things are going really well for
yeah.
me so far on the show, guys. Thanks a lot for kicking it off just the way I
You just got to
expected.
put him on the spot and make him super uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And that's basically what this show is. I commit
That's
a crime
right.
on John
Yeah,
every
that's right.
day. I will say, John loves all people and loves humans,
Thank you.
just for
Finally,
clarity's sake.
me.
Yeah,
Jeez Louise.
someone can admit it. But Vinny, just so our audience, if they're not familiar with you already and can get to know you, talk to me about how you got into true crime in the first place. I feel like John and I always get asked, like, what's the case? Why are you interested in it? And our answers have sort of, they've differed and also had a lot of similarities. So I'm wondering, same for you.
All right. Picture this, Sicily, 1975. No,
love it.
Well, it is kind of, it does go back to the 70s. I was reared on cop shows, and I remember distinctly sitting in front of the television with my older brother, and we watched the pilot for Kojak. And I think that was the moment I got hooked on crime. Right? Not committing crime, but like law enforcement solving crimes, that sort of
justice.
Stuff.
Justice.
And it goes back to, it really goes back to then. And then I have, I don't know if you know, I have a genetic defect. So my father was a lawyer and a federal judge and my brother's a lawyer. So I kind of like, it was destiny to end up in the world of law. So I practiced law for a while. And then, kind of put together the world of broadcasting, which I studied in college. I always had a microphone in my hand, had a cassette deck years ago. I could play some of the old shows for you if you want.
Yeah, let's get right into
cassette
that.
Cassette deck.
Yeah, we'll get right into it. Right. So, and I had a video camera like in the early 80s. Nobody has a video camera in the early 80s, but I did. And, so I've been doing that. So it was kind of like putting it all together. But the true crime thing really started way back when. Cop shows, baby.
That's right.
And you didn't want to, and just you didn't want to be a cop. You wanted to have the more like.
No, it's too dangerous. No way. Are you crazy? Although I did play it. I played a police officer once on Law and Order.
Oh, nice.
Really?
I was at a death scene. It was Law and Order. What was it? Not SVU.
Criminal Intent?
Criminal Intent, right? I couldn't make it up to SVU. Or the, so I was Criminal Intent. And I'm in the parking lot and, they're going through the, I'm a plainclothes cop, got my leather jacket on. I'm asking some questions. Then all of a sudden, boom, there comes Big, Peter, what's Peter Noth? Is that his name?
Yes. Is it
John
Peter?
Noth?
Yeah. It's
Chris,
Peter,
Chris,
whatever
Noth?
It is.
Chris Noth.
I knew it. Yes. Chris Noth.
One of those
and,
guys' names.
Yes. And it was an amazing day. And,
That's fun.
I'll show you about, I don't know if you could tell, about this much of me was in it. It was like half of my head.
Oh, that was you.
That was you.
That was me.
We knew
I
that.
I didn't realize we were talking about thieves, oh my gosh.
Well, I want to mention something because you're talking about how you were growing up and stuff. And I know Darren's going to love this. You guys are both New Jerseyans, right? Vinny, you grew up in New Jersey and lived in New Jersey.
How could you tell?
Well, not only, the visual, the good looking part. I did not a little bit of research.
Smart.
Yeah. How did your
Wearing
like,
jersey,
yeah, how did your Jersey
up.
Roots kind of like connect to your potential like career, if that makes sense?
Yeah. Well, you don't ask someone where they're from in New Jersey.
Yeah. What
you
exit?
Ask them what exit? Yeah.
Yeah
145.
That's right.
145. Grew up in West Orange, New Jersey, the original
I grew
Hollywood.
Up in Montclair. 151,
okay.
My friend, right next
There you
door.
go.
Sorry, just for clarification sake, you're a
Yeah.
Knicks fan, right, sir?
Go New York, go New York, go.
That's right.
Thank you.
There you
Okay,
go.
continue the interview, please.
Yes,
Continue
absolutely.
the
So I was a prosecutor in New Jersey,
That's right.
which was fun, but it was up
Right.
in Bergen County, and
Yep.
there wasn't a ton of crime up there, unfortunately for the people who lived
Fortunately,
there,
yeah.
but unfortunately for people trying to get experience in the courtroom, right?
Right.
We had a homicide unit in a huge county of like one prosecutor, so you weren't gonna,
Wow.
you'd have to stay there like 20 years to get into the homicide unit, so that didn't happen for me, but I learned a lot there. And then practiced civil law after that. But it was, like New Jersey crime, meeting the detectives. It was like a dream come true. It was so great. So all of that kind of, built me into who I am. And I try to bring that experience, to my analysis of cases based on, having actually practiced law. And then on the other hand, covering the nation's biggest trials for decades now. It's been decades,
Yeah.
people. No one's been at Court TV longer than I have. No one.
I saw that
It's history.
on my research as well. You've been doing this for quite some time, so that's very impressive.
Yes.
What is
Yes.
something, true crime has obviously evolved, especially in the last 10, 15 years or so on television, podcasting, of course, and now even you're seeing podcasts evolve into YouTube videos. Like it's this big cycle of media, but what has been like maybe the biggest difference from your perspective from when you started to today?
It's social media. It's the
Yeah.
interaction with the viewers, the listeners, whoever they are. And it's the building of this community through social media. Like the people were always there.
Right.
And if you worked at Court TV before social media, you'd go, you're covering a trial like in Vegas or something, right? And you'd show up, and then people would show up at the courthouse, and you would kind of get a flavor for who was watching the trials. But now you know exactly who they are. You know exactly who they are, and they're letting their voice be known. I love it. I love having that intimate relationship with the viewers because we're all part of the same community. And for me, listening and seeing what they're talking about helps me in my coverage of the cases because sometimes we're in the middle of a trial and I'm thinking, oh yeah, we got to talk about this, and then. Yeah, but everybody else is talking about that. I said, really? They're talking about that? Why? And then I read the comments and then I kind of understand it, then do the research, get the guest, whatever we have to do to kind of flush that out. And it's been fun. It's been amazing. And the other thing is, and you guys know this, the viewers, listeners, they know everything.
Oh,
So
yes.
you can't fake it in true crime.
It's
You
true.
cannot, like, there's a lot of broadcasting. You can fake it.
Yeah.
I did news for a while. You can fake local news a little bit, but like in our community, no
No.
way. You need to do the work. You need to read the documents. You need to watch the testimony, because they are. And you've got to at least know as much as the audience when you start the show.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean,
which is almost impossible, right? Because you almost have like an unlimited number of people with any living unlimited amount of time kind of diving into any sort of rabbit hole that lawyers or cops or detectives are limited simply that we always say true crime is sort of recession proof. It's always going on, like there's always going to be a case to cover. And let me just back him up because my entire family lives in Bergen County, but we were the only ones living in Essex County. And I think
Yikes.
having some like fun diversity also makes you more open to other people's opinions. I remember a couple cases when I was a kid or just being near Newark and kind of having attachment to the city. There was always kind of something to discuss. And, social media has obviously played a huge part in it. And over there have been some cases that social media has been pretty much helping to solve the crime. There have been a lot of Netflix documentaries about this. Gabby Petito was one in the news that obviously people banded together. But I'm curious from you in the past 10, 15 years, whenever social media has really taken off with this stuff, after covering so many stories, what patterns do you think the public kind of consistently misunderstands about criminal cases? If you could pick one or maybe 20, that would be helpful.
No, but well, the first thing is, and I think there's a misperception of the roles in a criminal trial of the prosecution and the defense, right? They're both lawyers, right? They're both
Right.
lawyers, and you know they're professionals, but their ethical obligations and their role in the courtroom is completely different. I'm a former prosecutor. You're ethically obligated to justice, which is the truth, whatever it is. Your job is not to get in there and get a conviction. Your job is to make sure the truth comes out. And if the person you've indicted is guilty, then yeah, okay, justice would be a conviction. But that's your job and your role. You can't play loose with the facts. You can't like come up with theories. You need the evidence behind it all. Whereas a criminal defense attorney has no obligation to the truth. And some get offended when I say that.
You're so
But
right,
their ethical
though.
obligation.
They're just planting doubt, though, because the prosecutor has making a claim. You're claiming that person is guilty. You're either guilty or not guilty, not guilty or innocent. Right? I mean, that's
Oh,
what you're
yeah,
doing.
absolutely. Here's the thing with a criminal defense attorney, their ethical obligation is only to the defendant, their client. It's not to see that justice happens. It's not to see that the truth comes out. Sometimes the work they do does bring out the truth if someone's been wrongfully accused, right? So sometimes they kind of step in it, but that's not their job. And I think a lot of people look at a trial and say, well, both sides are just trying to get to the truth or both sides. No, there's
No.
many more limitations on a prosecutor, which is why I'm always a lot harder on prosecutors who don't abide by that ethical obligation. Who go in there and do things that you're not supposed to do, like hide evidence? No, that's not your role. If there's evidence that's a bad fact for you, so be it. The facts are the
That's the
facts.
case.
That's the
And also,
case.
doesn't that ruin it for them in the long run? Because we see these cases, and we're going to ask you about certain things, you know, Murdaugh kind of being the most recent famous one of just like, you know, withholding information, jury tampering, these things that actually hurt the prosecution that you think might be great in the courtroom. If it comes out later, well, that potentially guilty person's walking away for free just because you didn't do your fucking job, right? You
Yeah,
know, you ruined it for the rest of them.
and it's our system. Like it's our system of justice. This is the best in the
Right.
world. It's not
Yeah.
perfect because
But
humans
it's the
are
best.
involved. But everything from a prosecution point of view has to be looked at in a much larger sense than any individual case, any individual prosecution. You're always going after the truth, but you're not cutting corners. You're not hiding evidence. It's not about gamesmanship. It's just about laying out the facts and making the arguments to the jury. That's it. Defense has much more leeway to do a lot more things, and we've seen it through the years, and we've seen it. But that's how the system has to work, because you're taking away someone's liberty. So we need to put in all those little protections to make sure that that's the person responsible. And I think we're much better at it now with the technology has helped a lot. Initially, when I was first at Court TV way back when, it was all about the Innocence Project and all this DNA was coming out and some people have been locked up. Well, we're almost past that at this point, almost, where a lot of those cases have been litigated. And now, hopefully, our system is even better at not prosecuting or convicting innocent people.
Save big money in your next painting project now at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect finish for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. Save big on Dutch Boy paints. Plus, view our weekly flyer on Menards.com and get your painting project started today. Save big money at Menards.
Don't you think by getting rid of the death penalty, that also might help, though? Like,
No,
doesn't.
stop. Stop.
Uh-oh. Before we get into that
Stop.
Yes, John, good
yeah,
interruption there. Good
let's
drug
jump in
in.
here because that could get spicy quick. But I want to mention one of the things I love about VPI, Vinnie Politan Investigates, which you can go watch on YouTube, and we're going to link it in the show notes and of course on our YouTube
Yes.
channel as well, is you get through the entire episode, we get to see you reacting to what's happening in the courtroom, which I think is such a unique
Fun.
format, because you can hear and listen to things in podcast form, but being able to see your actual expression and how you're even, I would say even your mannerisms about how you're paying attention to things, I find it personally fascinating. But as someone who has spent you said earlier, decades, your words, doing this and analyzing.
Using my words against
I'm
you.
Trying my best. I'm trying
my
best.
That's what we do here. Yeah. We are not lawyers.
Thank
okay?
you very
so
much.
We can do whatever
That's
we want.
Right.
Yeah.
But after all these years, are there certain behavioral signs that you sort of keep an eye out for when it comes to courtroom behaviors that sort of might tell the tale whenever you're analyzing these people that are in these moments or in these courtrooms?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, what's interesting when I hear someone, and sometimes it's in a courtroom, sometimes it's on a body cam, sometimes it's
Right.
on a, you know, in an interrogation or interview room with police, suspects or people of interest who over explain non-important facts and sort of gloss over the important stuff.
Interesting.
That red flags all over the place, you know, and, you know, there's a bunch of people and they tend to sound the same, you know, and I kind of every time I hear one, I'm like, oh, that kind of sounds like this guy. Like there's a guy named Larry Miliette out in Chula Vista, California. His wife is missing, has never been found. He's been charged with a murder. He spoke to the local news, did like this 15-minute interview. I'm listening to his voice and I'm like, is it me or does he sound like Scott Peterson?
That's not good. Yeah.
No, it's not good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And real detailed discussion and memory of things that are completely unimportant to things like your missing wife.
Right.
And I've noticed those patterns through the years. I've had body language and speech experts on who have sort of confirmed that fact to me. And it's something that really jumps out to me. And sometimes it happens with witnesses on the stand as well. So you know, sometimes, and I think the guilty person like sort of overcompensates a little bit and wants to sound like they're providing answers to everything when you're not really answering the stuff that needs to be answered.
Right.
You're answering all the malarkey, for lack of a better word.
Well, and
yeah, so
on the flip side to that, have there ever been moments where like you're investigating a case or reacting or whatever and completely changed your opinion, like maybe like midway through where you're like, okay, I had this in mind at first and then the evidence or even their body language or something kind of sort of
testimony
told
yeah.
a different story that made you
yes.
believe? Yeah.
Skylar Richardson. This was a young woman. She was a cheerleader and got pregnant, didn't tell anybody. Had the baby, didn't tell anybody. Was it a stillbirth? Was it not a stillbirth? The baby was buried in the backyard.
Mm.
And in an interrogation, they got her to say that she burned the child. And this was a big deal. It's like this, she was public enemy number one.
Right.
She like has a baby, kills it, and then sets the child on fire. Like,
jeez.
Really? In the back. Those were the allegations. And prosecutors continued with that throughout the trial. The basis of the prosecution theory was they had this expert who examined the remains and gave an initial opinion that it was charred, right? That the remains had been set on fire. But shortly thereafter, the expert took a closer look and said, whoa, 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 I got this all wrong.
Wow.
No, not that I don't know. I know for sure these remains were not burned. And I was like, oh my goodness, I've seen what a false confession looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know what she did to the child, right? I don't know if the child
right.
was born alive or not, but what she was alleged to have done afterwards clearly did not happen because the proof that prosecutors were relying upon, investigators in the case, was an expert who said, I got it wrong. But and what really got me charged up in this one was the investigator and prosecutors didn't go back on their allegation of what she did to the child afterwards.
They doubled down?
They doubled down on it. And guess who was found not guilty? Oh.
Yeah.
Skylar Richardson.
Right.
So, you know, it made me like in real time see a case where you saw the headline, you read about it, you saw on paper that she confessed, and then you watched the confession. But then you watch the confession with this other information that was so significant. And you could see the way they worked her in that interrogation room because she was young.
Yeah.
She was, you know, a high school kid. She may have been 17, 18, but she's young.
Their brains aren't fully developed then. I mean, even, you know, we often talk about Brandon Dassey from Making a Murderer and his confession, his, you know, interrogation and confessional. And you could just see the coercion like involved in it. And he just wants to go home. He just wants to get the F out of there. And regardless of guilt or not, it just seems like so something cruel to kind of do. And when we're covering cases and it's a big national media, Luigi Mangione, where everyone kind of knows Casey Anthony, OJ Simpson.
Ah, you said it.
Ah! Don't worry. We will get there. How do you completely unbias a jury pool with a case like that? I mean, especially with social media and media coverage. I mean, is there any way to have like a tabula rasa, men in black, you know, I'm erasing the last 3 years of your life to go into this, just listen to the facts? I mean, it's not a perfect system, as you said. Is that just part of it? Is there something the public should do? I do believe everyone should sit on a jury so they understand what it's like in a courtroom. But what do you kind of say about that?
I got two words for you. Voir dire.
Voir dire.
Or as they say in other parts of the country, voir dire.
Voir dire, yes.
Yes. But in Texas, Georgia, other places, we call voir dire. Or South Carolina, that's where you get to question the potential jurors, okay?
Right.
And the legal test is not, do you know anything about this trial or about this case? The legal test is, even if you know anything about this, can you put that aside, give the defendant a presumption of innocence, and base your verdict solely on the evidence that you hear inside this courtroom? And that's the magical question that every prospective juror is asked, especially in the high profile cases, which is all we cover at Court TV.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be high profile locally or maybe high profile nationally. But either way, the potential is the same. And that's the test. And this is the most important part of lawyering in the criminal law, is for the lawyers to be able to figure out if those jurors, those prospective jurors, are being honest with them. To see if there's what we call them stealth jurors. You know, someone who wants to be on that jury because they have an agenda. Well,
jury nullification.
Yeah, well, maybe it's jury nullification. Maybe they want to convict the person.
Right.
Or maybe they want to write a book. You know, you don't know what's motivating them. But it's up to the lawyers and the judge during that voir dire process, where they have an opportunity to question these jurors, either individually or as a group, questionnaires, everything, to figure out who they are and if they have an agenda in the case. And I think our system does a pretty good job of it. I really do. You know, there may be some stealth jurors here and there that slip through for whatever reason, but generally speaking, because I've been surprised by jurors, I never want to predict anymore what they're going to do, because their 12 people, their vantage point is different than everybody else's. Sometimes it's in sync with what the rest of us are seeing, and sometimes it's not.
Yeah.
It's a different experience inside that jury box. So I tend to trust the jurors and trust the system, but especially today with the internet and everything else,
can't be perfect.
High profile case, people are going to know about it.
That's true.
Right.
Who do you think has the advantage, though, generally?
You mean in terms of like...
prosecution or defense in a high-profile case where everybody knows the facts?
To me, I think the defense always has the advantage because they're not making a claim. The prosecution is the one making the claim that this persons or are guilty. The defense, is, to your point, is not making a claim, but they do need to give just a seed of doubt. And if they give just a freaking nugget, then those jurors should not convict.
Right. But that's in general. But how about in a high profile case, like where everybody knows everything about the case?
Like Luigi Mangione, Casey Anthony. I mean, I think depending on what the case is, I think the prosecution has a much easier time because you pretty much have every headline backing you up, every news story backing you up. I would think that you would have a much easier time.
I say no.
You mean it's easier for the defense?
This is why. Because of that voir dire, that voir dire process. All the evidence is out there, right? And take a look at Casey Anthony. Casey Anthony was in Florida, the Sunshine Laws. All the evidence that we saw at trial, almost all of it, was in the public domain. And trust me, everyone in Central Florida knew everything about this case.
Yeah.
Right? So now you're questioning the jurors. So who ends up on the jury? Who ends up on the jury? It's the person who, yeah, I heard all the evidence. I saw it all. I know about it all. But you know what? I can still give her a fair shake. I'm not convinced by all this stuff the government's put out there. That's a great defense juror. Or the outlier in society, the person who knows nothing about it. Like everybody else knows something about the case, but this person doesn't. That's an outlier. Defense attorneys love the outliers because they're very unpredictable. They're different than the rest of everyone else. So my contention, and I don't like to say it too loud to help defense attorneys too much, but they always fight to move a case. They always fight to seal everything and gag everybody. They should be doing the exact opposite. Because if everything's out there, right, it's not going to be any worse at the trial.
Right.
And now the 12 people making the decision know all that stuff, but they're still willing to give you a fair shake, or they haven't heard any of it. Both of those are good, if not great, defense jurors. And that's what happened in Casey Anthony.
I mean, I imagine you would know more about this than I would. I'm just thinking as like a citizen, like if I was a mom and I sat on the trial of Casey Anthony, I might feel different than if I was John Thrasher, who's a man, who's not a mom, who doesn't have kids. And obviously it comes out of voir dire. Maybe you want moms on the juror. Maybe you don't. Maybe that disqualifies me. But I do think there's so much built. We interview so many people that know beyond a shadow of a doubt that she was guilty or not guilty. And they're so confident, and they're just because it's a feeling in their gut, and there's no amount of evidence that would sway them either one or way. And so I worry about jurors like that a little bit. It's like, yeah, if you think she's a shitty mom, I don't care if she killed her. She's a shitty mom. Her daughter's dead. You're going to prison.
Yeah. That's where that voir dire process, you have to
hopefully
bring that out
and
understand that that person, you know, cannot be fair and impartial, you know, right. and it's incumbent on the judge, but it's incumbent upon both sides to ask the questions and figure that out. And sometimes they'll bring in great jury consultants who can also, you know, see through it a little bit as well. And it does happen. It does happen.
Yeah.
You know, it's the most important part of the trial. It really is the people who will make the decision, because people are so different and people receive the same information differently. People will look at the same video and see two different things. So while it's difficult to cover jury selection, you know, on court TV, sometimes we get the audio of the voir dire, and we've had that in some of the big cases, which is interesting. But it, you know, trust me, the viewership numbers are not high on those days.
Fair. Yeah. Makes for an interesting convo though.
Interesting though. And those are the people laying down the law, and for better or for worse, those are people sometimes deciding people's fate.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I just feel people should be really more informed about it, if anything.
My question for the three of us, do you think as true crime media people, we are at an advantage on a jury, or would most lawyers want us not on the jury? I'm curious what you think about that, Vinny. Because
I was just on a jury.
Oh, were you? Okay, so there you go. So, and they knew about your background, I'm sure, to some degree, right? So
they knew you were from New Jersey, and they let you decide something. Are you confident that they were doing their due diligence?
It was a civil case. It wasn't a criminal case. It was a civil case. But yeah, they really didn't dive deeply into my television part of me. They dove more into my, you're a former prosecutor and you did this kind of work. Did you ever work for an insurance company? and I did, but it still didn't stop
them. That's funny.
So, and I'll tell you this, being in the jury box, like there is much more of a connection between you and the witnesses and the parties in the case than I've ever had. Like that plaintiff, the man who was suing a doctor, it was a malpractice case. Mm. I wanted to hug him, but then the doctor took the stand and I was like, this man is amazing. I want him to operate on me, and there's nothing wrong with me, but I still want him to operate. Like
fix whatever.
It becomes so much more real and personal.
Yeah.
That connection, because you're so close to them and it's all you're focused on. There's none of the other noise that's right. happening. We weren't sequestered and it was just, you know, it was like a 4-day trial, but you take your job seriously. And there is, I just saw and heard the evidence so differently. And I've been in so many courtrooms
right.
as a prosecutor, as a reporter, as a correspondent. And this was just a different experience.
That's really yeah. cool. I want to ask you, going back to VPI, your show on Court TV and Law and Crime, available on YouTube and also on Linear, whenever you guys, wherever you want to watch it.
Also, 8-track and cassette.
Good plug.
It's available on 8-track and cassette.
And on 8-track and cassette, if you like older media, absolutely, 100%.
We'll fax it over to you guys immediately. Yeah. John, put the fax number in the show notes,
That's
please.
Right. We'll make sure every single person on earth can see this. Well, that's our job.
Yes.
You know, you're, I think, in the middle or just started the newest season. It's available now. Is there a case from this particular season that kind of stayed with you emotionally that either has aired or is about to air that maybe you felt a little bit more of a connection with than others that maybe you could tease or talk about?
Well, I think it's the one everyone's talking about right now. Mackenzie Schirulla.
Oh, yeah.
Please tell me you watched The Crash. Please tell me you watched
We're going
to
cover yes, this in a future episode. So,
thank
oh,
God.
You are.
Okay, good. Because yes. I really need to talk to you about it. I really yeah. must.
No, like we covered the trial and
right.
What there's a lesson here, and it's the trial was big. It wasn't a long trial. It was a quick case. The sentencing was everything bubbled up that day, and it was a story, and it was a big story, but it came and went, right? It
right.
happened, and then right. everyone moved on, and no one has thought about it since. And for some reason, Mackenzie and her parents decided, yeah, let's do this documentary with the folks from Netflix.
Worst decision ever. First decision.
Well, I think the thought going in was, well, you know, these other cases, when they do the series, people get to know us and they feel bad for us. And they'll understand that this was a wrongful conviction and they'll like me.
I don't know if that worked. That yeah, yeah.
Didn't walk away thinking those parents were particularly great parents or parents of the year, for that matter. Did not walk away from that doc thinking that. So
there's no sympathy for her or her parents or her family.
Right.
And the reality of the case is at the sentencing, she won the sentencing because the decision for the judge was consecutive or concurrent sentences for the right. death of her boyfriend, Dom, and their friend, Davion, who was in the car when she drove 100 miles an hour on purpose into a wall. Obviously, she was attempting to take her own life too, but of course the driver survives. So she survived. And she got charged with 2 counts of murder and she was convicted. 15 to life was the sentence, but it was either going to be consecutive, one after the other. So you've got to serve one sentence before you serve the other, doubles your time, or it's concurrent, where the judge can look at it and say, well, it was one act. Yes, there were two victims, but it was really one act. So for sentencing purposes, I will sort of merge them and you'll serve the sentences concurrently at the same time.
Right. Her age played into that a little bit though too, right? Because maybe the judge was like, she's 17.
But she won. She won. The judge didn't like her. The judge, lashed out at her and her mother, but still gave her concurrent, which means she's up for parole. Not that she's guaranteed anything, but 20, up for 38. Parole. Yeah, she'll be 33 years old.
Right. She can have a life. Right. And I will say that's the point about prison, though, isn't it? Really, it's meant to rehabilitate you. And in theory, when you're that young, I used air quotes there, sir. I used air quotes.
What you talking about, Willis?
That's what we want. Ideally, that's what we want. That if you're going to get out of prison, you better serve society well and not be a menace. That's what we hope. I'm not saying it does that. I'm just saying that, like, who wouldn't want that? And in theory, I think if a 17, 18 year old girl goes in there, serves 15 minimum, comes out at 32, 33 and can have a whole life, if she changes her life and becomes whatever, that will end as a tragic story, but it will at least be, there will be like a redemption arc there for her. John, I know you haven't watched it yet, but this is not really a spoiler alert in any sort of way. Dini, I'm wondering for you, have you ever seen in court a judge, when someone's giving their like victim statement, when her mom was like speaking for Mackenzie and the judge interrupted the mom to be like, oh, so you don't care about the other parents? I've never seen that. Not that I watch a ton of these, but like, have you ever seen that? I was almost shocked that she was like putting the mom on blast, deservedly so, but I was surprised by it.
No, it's unusual. It's absolutely,
it is.
It was quite a moment where you kind of stand back. Her statement, though, wasn't really a victim impact statement because she's not a victim. She's speaking up for her daughter. Like, if you do that with a victim, that would be even more
crazy.
Shocking,
yeah.
Right? But usually, you know, family members come up and they're going to say what they're going to say and you do it and you move on. But the judge, because it was a bench trial also, like the judge, there was no jury. It was the judge who made the decision. So she was, I think, much more in tune with everything connected to this case.
That's true.
And the facts and everything else. So I think that sort of struck a nerve with her, and it almost undermined, to a certain extent, some points of it may have undermined the verdict itself, right? So I think she responded that way. But just getting back to the concurrent thing, And my real point is that when she's 33, she's going to go in front of the parole board. But now, because of this Netflix documentary and the spectacle that she has created with her family, and then the response of the community, now all of a sudden, there's a much brighter spotlight on it. And that spotlight is not going to help her. Like, if you're under the radar, and it happens all the time, people get out on parole for cases. You know, the family may be angry, but nobody else really pays attention to it.
Right.
Now, in 15 years, everyone's going to pay attention to it. The Netflix documentary will bubble back up again. People will be watching it. They'll be talking about it. And it'll be a bigger news story because of what they did with this documentary and their response to the response of the documentary. They just keep talking.
And I mean, look at us right now. The three of us are having this conversation, continuing the conversation on social media. Like, this is like worst case scenario in a way for that
and
situation.
And especially because we in theory, I mean, she obviously did kill them, right? Like, there's no questioning that she was not in the car or anything, but we're never going to understand what happened in the easy turn on that corner and then booking it for X amount of seconds. You know, I guess the car registered like the last 5 seconds of going 100, no letting up on the brakes. If she serves, if she gets the full 15, gets out. I mean, do we just have to accept that we may never really know the answer to this case? We may never really know. If she admits it, I don't really I don't know what to do with it.
You only have one survivor from what happened in that exact moment. The best that the rest of us can do is listen to or take a look at the text messages, the communications, and look at that relationship. And it seems like it's clearly connected to what was going on between Mackenzie and Dom, that things were breaking apart. There's information that he was trying to break up with her. One of his friends came in. I don't know if you saw this. Do we want to spoil anything? Maybe we don't want to spoil it.
Well, we can.
I think you do need to watch the doc regardless if you know what happened, to watch the body language. Like, I'm still making him watch regardless if he knows the verdict, because he needs to see what Mackenzie's saying. He needs to see how she's saying it. You know, you need to see the parents involved here.
But the description of the relationship that came from a friend.
Yes, the guy.
Who said, yeah, I think she put a voodoo spell on him.
Yeah, that was crazy.
But to me, that's a vivid picture of what was going on here. Like, it's inexplicable,
that's fair,
except
yeah.
that she put a voodoo spell on him.
No, I know. And maybe it's because I'm almost 40 and I grew up without a cell phone. But the concept of like ripping a bong while driving and filming myself ripping a bong while driving, like, I'm not even a parent. And I was just like shaking my, I've never felt older than being like, is this what people are doing now? Like, I was just... It's like, girl, I don't even care if you're guilty. You're guilty. Like, you got to be stupid to do that. So there's nothing about this that makes you seem like you have your shit together in any sort of way. It's just, it's a very complicated, layered thing that I think she didn't do herself justice by going into that documentary. I think you're right.
No. And the other thing is that you've got these other inmates who are coming forward and talking about what she's like behind bars,
which is not good.
And that's not painting a good picture either.
It's not good. Has covering crime, being a lawyer, being a prosecutor, being in court TV, hell, being from New Jersey, has covering crime made you more trusting of people or less trusting of people?
Oh, less. Always
think
less.
About it there, Vinny. Don't answer too quickly now. Don't jump the gun here.
No, there's just skepticism everywhere, right? You've seen the way these things have happened. You hear the excuses and everything, and you're like, no.
That makes sense.
I've covered this story before. I've covered this case before. So I think it makes you much more skeptical and aware. But it also, on the other hand, it makes you, especially when you go to the courthouses or do the interviews, when you get to know the families that have been through this, it gives you another sense of, wow, how do they go on? How do they continue to live their lives and move forward? And that's the other part I try to remind people, throughout my career, I've tried to remind them that all these cases we watch in the court, these are real people. This has happened to real people. Sometimes we get to know them, sometimes we don't. But when this trial's over, they all have got to go home. And, they've got another day and another day. And their sister, their daughter, their brother, their son is never coming back. Their lives are forever changed. And our system of justice, when you have a verdict, and it's a verdict that the victim's family was hoping for, some people throw around the C word, that there's a level of closure. But what I've learned, it's not really closure. Like, you can never close the book on what happened because that loss is forever. But what our system can do when the truth comes out and the person responsible for the action is convicted is that the family can exhale and they can turn the page.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They can at least turn the page without, I'm thinking of Savannah Guthrie, who, by the way, got her start on court TV years ago in the national media. For her, they're not even at that point where they're looking at the page because they don't even know what happened.
Right.
can't imagine what that is like, not knowing what happened to your mom. And hopefully at some point they do find out. Hopefully then someone is brought into a courtroom and then they can turn the page. But they can't even get to the point of knowing what happened to mom.
And that has to be the worst of it. Yeah, we talked about that just briefly when we were mentioning her. Obviously there was really no facts to share. And it was just like, that has to be the most disheartening, is it's like, it's not finding out that she's dead. It's even if you know in your heart that she is, I think we all think now, obviously, that Nancy Guthrie has passed. I think we kind of knew that early on, but never really knowing and never understanding where she was taken or how she died. I can't think of something more mentally claustrophobic than that. That's the only way that I can describe it. Just a suffocation of sanity. And I feel horrible for her. And I just hope, in some way that they can turn the page, maybe with time. If you never find out, you're forced to turn the page. Not to never give up. I just hope for peace for her. And I don't know how you get that.
They want answers. Victims' families, they want to know. And sometimes people say, well, it's tough sitting in the trial. Sometimes at the trial is the first time they're finding out what actually happened.
Right.
And as difficult and as horrible as it is, most of them, there are exceptions, obviously, but most of them want to know what happened. The Idaho 4, that case, those families, they wanted to know. And, when someone pleads guilty, sometimes they get around that fact and they don't find out. And that's why the Idaho 4 families wanted the discovery. They wanted the reports because they never had that moment in court where the defendant actually told them what happened or the evidence came out in the courtroom. That never happened for them. And they need that. A lot of them need that. Most of them need that. And I think our system owes it to them.
I agree.
We're going to wrap up here. This has been a very compelling, amazing conversation with two
Talk
New
to you for hours,
Jerseyans.
Vinny.
Yeah. You guys are, you know,
two Knicks fans. Two,
two
Knicks
Knicks fans. There you go.
Fans.
But before we wrap up, I thought we would do something really kind of interesting here. We wanted to just do like a one word reaction from you about eight of the some of the biggest cases in true crime history. Don't now think about it if you need to for each one. But whatever that
I may have a follow up, John.
Yeah,
I can't
Darren
promise
might
I
have.
Will not have a follow up for VP over here.
Odds
okay.
are you will. That's fine. But
yes.
Yeah, we're just thinking one word that comes to mind about each of these cases. Some of them are older. Some of them, I'm just looking
they're all
right
well
now.
Known.
Okay, they're all well
yeah.
known at least. I'm just wondering if they've all been completely. Yeah. Litigated, but I think they have here for the most part. So are you down for that, Vinny? A one word response?
I'm down for it.
Okay.
I had a show on HLN years ago called HLN After Dark.
Uh-huh.
And I would
Ooh.
And I would subject my guests to this.
There you go.
But this is the first time
tables
it's been
have
turned on me.
The tables have turned.
Karma's a bitch.
That's
Vinny.
Right.
Karma's a bitch.
Okay. Darren, why don't
you
okay,
take
I'll take the first one. All right. So Vinny, one word response, a one word reaction. The first word that comes to mind. O.J. Simpson. Take the
glove.
I had a feeling that might be what you might say. Okay, Darren.
Scott Peterson.
Connor.
Oh. Casey Anthony.
Kaylee.
JonBenet Ramsey.
Ransom.
Menendez Brothers.
Lucky.
I'm going to push back on that in a minute, but Ted Bundy.
Volkswagen.
Two more here.
Jody Arias.
I love Stumpin' Vinny.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's. I don't. I think it's two words.
Go ahead. We'll allow a
we'll
one.
We'll allow it. We'll allow it.
It might be hyphenated. Gas can.
Ooh.
Gas can.
Yes. Oof. Yes. Yes.
Finally, Golden State Killer.
Finally.
Yeah.
That's
Amen.
Good. Thank Amen you. Those were good. I loved how you really like locked in there for a second and like really gave us your best thought. I appreciate that.
I actually I have a
ahead.
Question just about the O.J. Simpson one. Act. I mean, Menendez Brothers, I want to push back on, but the O.J. Simpson one. Do you think that was really more the prosecution failed to prove it well enough or Rodney King / Sign of the Times and the jury? What does it really come down to for you? I mean, I know it's a combo of both, but what's the percentage?
It's a combo of both, but it's two things, right? So it's the jury, it's all of that, because the jury has spoken afterwards, and that's
right.
part of the thought process, right?
That ESPN doc was so good.
No, it was amazing, and but the other part of it is when you really look at it, right? When you really break it down. Think about this. You have the lead investigator in the case, who just passed away, by the way, Mark Furman, who got up on the witness stand, was asked about planting evidence, and took the fifth. Like, how could you convict someone?
Yeah,
like, that's
right.
the definition of reasonable doubt. Like,
right.
Like, I get it. I get it was a 9-month trial. So little moments get lost here and there.
Right.
And yes, he lied about this, but, and
that's
usually
all the doubt you need. That's
in
all
most,
the doubt,
yeah. In most trials, when someone's taken the fifth, it doesn't happen in front of the jury. Like,
right. That's right. Actually.
No, it's like, he's going to take the fifth. All right. He doesn't get on the witness stand. Like anytime there's problems with the lead investigator, ask Karen Reed about this. It's difficult to convict. Trooper Proctor up in the Karen Reed case. Trooper Proctor was problematic. And if there's a problematic issue with the lead investigator,
right,
and you want the jury to convict someone beyond a reasonable doubt, it's not happening. From my own experience, if there was ever a moment, even in a very insignificant little burglary case, if one of my police officers got up there and was not telling the truth about something that had nothing to do with the case about the guilt of the defendant, they're still not going to convict. And it actually happened in a case. And if you're from Bergen County, you know they have these things called the blue laws, where all the stores have to be closed on Sunday.
Malls are closed. Everything's closed.
Everything's
on
closed. Wow. So the police officer who made the arrest was an off-duty police officer who in his spare time worked at a used car place. And it was a burglary of one of the cars in the lot, and it was a Sunday. And the officer would not admit that he was working and that the business was open. And the jury saw right through it. And despite the fact that the guy was guilty of stealing the car radio, remember when that used to happen?
Yeah, for sure.
Happened to my dad a few times,
They wouldn't convict him. And that's a lesson that I should have carried with me through all these years, but it really is reinforced now through Procta, through Furman. If you have a problem with the person in charge of investigating the defendant, you're not going to win your case.
That's it.
Do you think the Karen Reed trial was adjudicated appropriately? Do you think justice was served?
Okay. Well,
part two coming soon. No, go ahead. No,
I just have to know. We mentioned Karen Reed. I just have to know.
It was never a murder case. It was never, ever, ever a murder case. Never should have been charged as a murder case. And that was a problem. What happened inside the courtroom, murder wasn't proven. Her hitting, striking John O'Keefe with the car was never proven beyond a reasonable doubt. It just wasn't proven. And why is that? Well, there were a lot of reasons for that. Do I think it was proven that she was framed? No, that wasn't proven, but the defense doesn't have to prove anything like that. Now, if I always look at these cases where they say someone's being framed and someone else did it, or if they're just pointing the finger at someone else, I say, okay, well, what does the case look like against that person? What if that person was brought into court and charged with the crime? What would their defense be? They would point the finger right back at the defendant.
Right.
If you charged the people inside of 34 Fairview with the murder of John O'Keefe, their defense would be, it wasn't us, it was her, and the defense would put on all the evidence of her, which may not be enough to prove a case beyond a reasonable doubt, but it would certainly be enough to raise a reasonable doubt.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. Well, guys,
just dealing with Boston PD there, I just felt like there was something squirrely going on. I don't know. Cops, I don't know. It just made me be like, I don't know if they would admit guilt if this was somebody in the house, you know. It just made me question a lot. And I feel like she certainly did not deserve to be put away for murder. Cause there was no evidence.
No, the murder was such an overcharge. It was, it was shocking. And but it added to the intensity of the case. It added to the intensity of the defense as well. I mean,
right.
But just one more point on that.
Yeah.
Like the big issue in the Karen Reed case originally was that Google search.
Right.
In the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Haas Long to die in the cold.
Haas, yes.
Right? And that was the smoking gun that was going to set her free. But when we got to the trial, it wasn't even like top five.
Yeah, it wasn't really even mentioned.
That's right.
Because I interviewed Alan Jackson and Dave Yannetti early on. And when they made that claim, I was like, oh my goodness, wow. I said, really? Are you sure? That's what... Oh, there. Yes, sure. That's it. And that was the moment that started. You know, Turtle Boy, right? Have you heard of Turtle Boy?
Yep.
Yeah, Turtle Boy and the Turtle Riders. That was the one fact that started that whole movement.
Trying to get her free. Yeah.
And then by the time we get to the second trial, it's not even a top five issue in the case.
That's crazy.
It's all about Procta and everything else,
right?
Which to me is fascinating. But at the end of the day, you know, was justice served? Well, I would say no, justice hasn't been served in that case yet because no one's been held responsible for the death of John O'Keefe. And I don't think he died of natural causes.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Agreed.
Either. Well, Vinny, I could talk to you all day.
Just
I hope
be our
that
third
we can
host at
this
point.
I have to have you come back on when we have like big cases to discuss, oh, yeah. because I really feel like you could shed such an interesting light on all of this, just kind of being in and out. If this hadn't encouraged you to trust another Jersey person, it should. Everyone should check out VPI. Vinny Politan investigates on Court TV and Law and Crime Network. It's on YouTube right now. We're going to link it in our show notes, right, John?
Yes, absolutely.
And on our own YouTube channel, Vinny, this was, you're very fun to talk to.
Yes.
And I like how you are about all
great,
of this.
This is a great thing. I'm going to bring my pets next time.
Yes, yeah,
well,
please do.
You know, they have to have either a certain cuteness or
That's
a certain heft. As you see, they're going to be weight. They're going to have a weigh-in, and then we're going to have a photo shoot with them, and that's the qualification to get on
the show.
There
you go.
Fantastic. Great to hang out with you guys.
Thank you, Vinny.